the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider on this last weekend of November. Sunday is the start of Advent and the first Sunday of the new liturgical year, and I'll talk about that in the Q&A after the news highlights. And after the Q&A is the interview segment, where my special guest this week is Father Bernardo Cervellera, a PIM missionary priest and journalist who heads the Asia News Agency. Our focus this week and next is China. In part one, Father talks about his years in China. He explains the difference between the so-called Patriotic Church Association and the Underground Church, and he speaks about life for Catholics today in China. We also talk about the controversial Vatican-China agreement, signed in 2018 and renewed this October, that regards the naming of bishops. That's just the tip of the iceberg, so stay tuned for that. Thanksgiving Day and Friday are holidays for EWTN employees, so I'm preparing Vatican Insider a few days earlier than usual. Thus, the news segment will only cover events through Wednesday. And now a look at a few of the highlights. Sunday, November 22nd, the last Sunday of the liturgical year in the Solemnity of Christ the King, was celebrated at the Vatican with joy, but in a reduced fashion, of course, with COVID restrictions. A major focus of Sunday's papal mass at the altar of the chair was the passage at the end of mass of the World Youth Day cross from a small group of young people from Panama to a group of youth from Lisbon, the site of the next World Youth Day in 2023. In the years between International Youth Days, Youth Day is marked on a diocesan level on Palm Sunday. However, Pope Francis on Sunday announced he has decided to transfer the diocesan celebrations of World Youth Day from Palm Sunday to Christ the King Sunday. The announcement came ahead of the passage of the Youth Day cross and the icon of Our Lady Salus Populi Romani, the symbols of World Youth Day, in what Pope Francis described a significant ceremony. He said the center of the celebration remains the mystery of Jesus Christ, the Redeemer of man, as St. John Paul II, the initiator and patron of World Youth Day, always emphasized. Francis told young people, "Cry out with your life that Christ lives and reigns." He then quoted Christ's words from the Gospel, "If you keep silent, the very stones will cry out." Monday, November 23rd, Pope Francis met five NBA players and National Basketball Players Association officials at the Vatican to discuss their efforts to address, quote, social and economic injustice and inequality. "For me, it is a moment of special pleasure to receive you," said Pope Francis. "Sport is a messenger for good," he added, underlining the message of the beauty of sport and teamwork that accompanies it. The Players Association said the invitation to come to Rome was the Pope's. On Tuesday, November 24th, the Vatican announced that Pope Benedict XVI's former butler, Paolo Gabrielli, had died at age 54 after a long illness, leaving behind a wife and three children. After several years of service to the Holy See as part of the pontifical family, Gabrielli in 2012 became the protagonist of the first VatiLeaks, the theft of confidential documents later published in a book. He was judged and found guilty by the Tribunal of Vatican City State in October 2012. On December 22, 2012, he received the forgiveness and official pardon of Pope Benedict XVI. He later served at the Bambino Gesù Children's Hospital in Rome. On Wednesday, November 25th, the general audience was again live-streamed from the Papal Library in the Apostolic Palace, as Pope Francis, joined by multilingual prelates from the Secretariat of State, continued his catechesis on prayer. He began by saying, "We now reflect on how constant prayer was the driving force of the missionary activity of the first Christians. St. Luke tells us that they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. Today, too," he said, "the Church's life is centered on prayer, which unites us to Christ and inspires our witness to the Gospel and our charitable service to those in need." In prayer, explained Francis, we experience the life of the risen Jesus, who in the power of the Spirit continues to be present in our world, especially in the Church's teaching and sacraments, and our efforts to advance his kingdom of reconciliation, justice, and peace. The Catechism teaches that the Holy Spirit keeps the memory of Christ alive in his Church, and grants courage and conviction to all those missionaries who in our day too face arduous journeys, dangers, and persecution for the sake of the gospel. Also Wednesday, Holy See Press Office Director Matteo Bruni issued a statement in which he confirmed that the Reverend Thomas Chen Tin Hao is the third bishop appointed and ordained within the framework of the provisional agreement between the Holy See and the People's Republic of China on the appointment of bishops. Bruni added that certainly other episcopal consecrations are expected in the future because various processes for new episcopal appointments are underway. Well, those are the few news highlights of the week, but don't move. Stay here for the Q&A and then my conversation about China with Father Cervalera. And by the way, this Saturday in a consistory, Pope Francis will create 13 new cardinals, and Sunday the new eminences will say Mass with the Holy Father in St. Peter's Basilica. Tune in to EWTN for those special programs. Welcome to the Q&A. As I mentioned last week, when looking at the solemnity of Christ the King, I'm often asked about the liturgical seasons of the year. What is their proper order, and what are the colors for each season? Well, there are five liturgical seasons: Advent, Christmas, Lent, Easter, and Ordinary Time. Distinct liturgical colors appear in connection with the different seasons of the liturgical year. Now, last weekend we celebrated the Feast of Christ the King. That was the last Sunday in the liturgical year, so this weekend we start Advent, the first Sunday of the new liturgical year. The Catechism of the Catholic Church tells us in number 1168, the liturgical year is, quote, the celebration throughout the year of the mysteries of the Lord's birth, life, death, and resurrection, in such a way that the entire year becomes a, quote, year of the Lord's grace, end quote. Thus, the cycle of the liturgical year and the great feasts constitute the basic rhythm of the Christian's life of prayer, with its focal point at Easter. The liturgical year begins with the first Sunday of Advent that introduces a season of 4 weeks with the theme of expectation of the coming of Christ. During the first 2 weeks, the final coming of Christ as Lord and Judge at the end of the world is the focus of attention. From December 17th to the 24th, the emphasis shifts to anticipation of the celebration of his nativity on the solemnity of Christmas. Advent has 4 Sundays. Since the 10th century, the first Sunday has marked the beginning of the liturgical year in the Western Church. In the Middle Ages, a kind of pre-Christmas fast was in vogue during this season.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
The best way to practice not really being able to fully celebrate in other people's successes is to go to what you're grateful for in your own life. So when someone next to you is having a great success, you immediately go to, Lord, I'm so grateful. I have my health. Well, I have my husband. I'm grateful. I have a roof over my head. And all of a sudden, everything becomes just perfect.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
EWTN is now on Twitter. Get short, timely messages from EWTN on your computer or cell phone. It's easy to stay up to date on a wide variety of topics: pro-life news, Vatican announcements, catechesis, apologetics, the latest EWTN programming, and more. You can link to EWTN on Twitter from our homepage or go to twitter.com/EWTN. At work, at home, at school, and on the road, stay connected to your world with EWTN's Twitter page.
The EWTN home video highlight for November is A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 2, The Gender Agenda.
For two centuries, the ideologues of socialism or communism have used deceptive word jugglery to rebrand themselves as liberals or progressives.
Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
You need to pray. There's two things I want you to do. Keep close to our Lord in the Holy Eucharist. He's really and truly present. Body, blood, soul, and divinity. Stay close to His Mother. With those two loves, you will always have the light to see what is right and what is wrong.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Well, welcome to a new edition of Vatican Insider, where I have a special friend and a special guest this week on the interview segment, and that's Father Bernardo Cervellera. He's a longtime friend. He's a PIM missionary priest. That stands for the Pontifical Institute for Foreign Missions. And Father is a journalist who has headed the acclaimed Asian News for many years. But before that, I think this is where we might have first met. Before that, he headed Fides, the Vatican News Agency of the Congregation for Evangelization. So, and that's when we met, because I was working at the time at the Vatican Information Service in the press office. So, Father Bernardo, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for inviting me, and welcome to our listeners.
You've been to China, of course, many, many times, studied there, etc. And I have nowhere near your knowledge about China, but I did spend 3 weeks there in 1995 on the Vatican delegation to the United Nations Conference on Women. And if I'm not mistaken, that was where we really first got into battle gear. We had met in Rome before that. I did go in 2001. I spent about 12 days in Taiwan. So in both instances, I learned a great deal about China, society, culture, history, and about the story of Christians and Catholics in China, obviously a minority. Now, Father, you have lived and taught in China. Let's look at your background for a second.
I was working in Hong Kong as a journalist, also for Asia News. At the time, Asia News was just a printed magazine, a fortnight magazine. And we followed all the news in China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Southeast Asia. So I could travel a lot in China and in all these countries. Before working for Asia News in Hong Kong, I stayed for 1 year in Taiwan, in Furan Tashua, in the university, Catholic University in Taipei, studying Mandarin. And then in the last period of my time, 7 year time in the Chinese world, I also stayed in China, in Beijing, studying Chinese, and also I'm trying to teach history of the Western civilization to the university.
Well, that's wonderful. At the University of, was it known as Peking or Beijing?
At the Beijing University.
Yes, at the time. So, now, Father, for decades, I think I became interested in China as I did in Eastern Europe when I was working for the Vatican. Of course, the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 changed so much there. This very month of November changed so many things there. I'm not sure too many things have changed in China, but that's why I'm here talking to you. Because for decades, Catholics have really been divided into what we've been calling two churches. The Catholic Church approved by the government, the Patriotic Association, and then what has always been called the underground church. The underground church being those who were loyal to Rome, to the Holy Father, to the teachings of Rome, whereas the Patriotic Church was being asked to be loyal and answer more or less to the government. So fill that out for me, or have I incorrectly stated those facts?
Well, let us say one thing, that division was perhaps right during the Maoist time. because many bishops and priests, they belong to the Patriotic Association, and they couldn't have, also it was impossible to have relationship with the Vatican. But then, as soon as Mao Zedong died, and the relationship with the world were warmed up, let us say, many bishops who had been ordained out of the responsibility of the Holy See tried in hiding to contact the Vatican, asking for pardon, for forgiveness, and trying to receive a blessing from the Pope. So in the 80s and 90s, and also in the year 2000, many bishops, many patriotic bishops, they became real Catholic bishops with the blessing of the Holy See. So let us say, during the Benedict XVI pontificate, almost all the bishops in China, they were united into the communion of the Church. But there were still seven bishops, yeah, who were excommunicated, because also they were very ambitious, and they tried to follow much more the indications of the party more than the indications of the Church, and so on. But this problem was solved with the provisional agreement between the Vatican and in China, because as a comma of this provisional agreement, the Pope Francis canceled the excommunications to these bishops. So now we can say that the Church in China is really a Catholic Church under the Pope. The process has been slow, but very, very, very fruitful during the years of John Paul II and Benedict XVI and with Pope Francis. But now we have to say that this division remains in part because the two branches of the Church, now we cannot say that there are two churches, mm-hmm, but there are two, right, different ways to live the mission of the Church in China. One more strict towards the government, the other one very lenient towards the government. But this division is much more kept by the government, because the government allows those who are enrolled in the Patriotic Association to perform rites, catechesis, meetings, and having churches and buildings. But those who don't submit to the Patriotic Association, yeah, they cannot have these things, and if they dare to celebrate masses, to have education of children, uh-huh, in places which are not registered with the with the Ministry of Religious Affairs, they are considered criminals. So they can be fined, they can be arrested, and so on.
So the government is really being stricter. And then just to jump in here for a minute, Father said the agreement, of course, between the Holy See and China. And what he's referring to is both of us deal with China. So when we say agreement, we know that you're talking about the original 2018 September 22nd agreement that was signed between the two. And actually, it has nothing to do with diplomatic relations, nothing like that.
No,
it was
absolutely
strictly
not.
It was strictly for the nomination and work of bishops. But the interesting thing about that 2018 accord, which only last month, October of this year, 2020, was ratified for a second time. And apparently there is some kind of clause in there, but we've not seen it, that either side could pull out of the agreement unilaterally. But here's the difficult thing for me, Father, because I've been following China for so long. Wherever the Church has been persecuted, always seems to attract me. I think what has made a lot of us question the agreement is the fact that even Cardinal Zen, you and I know Cardinal Zen, the former Archbishop of Hong Kong, who has been all along very much against this agreement, he and Cardinal Tong, they have no idea what's in the agreement. There's only apparently a handful of people in the Secretariat of State who know what's in the agreement.
The point is that China wanted to keep this agreement secret because they said it is provisional, so no need to publish it. And the Vatican agreed. But this is very, very strange, I think, because even provisional agreements in other parts of the world, they are published, and also because they are so important and so important for the faithful and for the world population to understand what is about this agreement, I think they should publish it. Instead, they don't publish. So we only know of the agreement what the Pope said in some sentence, in some interviews, or what the Secretary of State, Cardinal Parolin, said in some word, but very, very, very little. However, from what we know, the agreement is on the nomination of the new bishops, in which, as Pope Francis said, the Pope has the last word. So, in some way, China recognizes that the Pope has a kind of jurisdiction on the church in China. This is something really new because since Mao Zedong time, Mao wanted to build up a national church without any relationship with the Vatican, which was considered a foreign power, which was planning to destroy the Republic of the People's Republic of China. So this is something new. What is, can I say, a little bit sad about this agreement is that on one hand, since the signing of the agreement, practically no bishop has been nominated with this new agreement.
Yes.
And just in these days, that is second half of November, there has been one bishop in Qingdao who has been nominated with this agreement. So very strange that with a lack of 40 bishops at least that we need in China, only one bishop has been nominated in more than 2 years.
Well, in talking to so many people...
Oh, sorry, there is one more thing which is even more problematic in this agreement. Because the agreement only touches the nomination of the bishops, this means that other aspects of the religious freedom are not discussed by the Vatican and China. So, bishops in prisons, priests in prison, education of the children, built up of the churches, and the mission of the church into the society, all these things are not considered. And in all these things, China is continuing doing what he did before.
That
is repression.
I and others who have the same interest that you do, that both of us do in China, or anywhere that the church is seen to be persecuted, a lot of us have the impression that the Vatican does want the whole world to think now everything is honky-dory, everything is okay in China, and there's like one church where everything's okay. And you and I are just talking about it, and that's not the case at all.
No, I don't say... I would say this. For example, Cardinal Parolin, when he gave the news and commented the news about the renewal of the agreement, he said that we have a lot of problems, but the agreement up to now is just on the nomination of the bishop. But we still have a lot of problems, and we hope to face these problems in the future. Let us hope that they will do it, because in these 2 years, they didn't.
On this paper in front of me, what I have done is list the issues that are troubling for me and for many, and you've just more or less went through them. For one in particular, one case disturbed me. One of the underground bishops, so a bishop, and I'm not pronouncing names because I would surely make a mistake, very loyal to Rome and the Holy Father, he was asked to stand down, stand aside, if you will, and one of the patriotic bishops took his place, and this was with Vatican approval. Oh, Father Berardo, that left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Yeah, I know. Many people in the underground church, so-called underground church, they were not only upset, but, very saddened. Saddened by this fact, because it was really a new way of doing by the Vatican. Before, there were many, let us say, patriotic bishops or official bishops who were only recognized by the government, who were reconciled with the Vatican. But in this case, because they came from an ambiguous path,
right.
So the Vatican would put as ordinary bishop of the diocese the underground bishop, and as auxiliary bishop the official bishop. Instead, now I think to please a little bit China and to show that we want to have dialogue with you, they accepted to put the official bishop, who had been reconciled, let us say, a few hours before,
sure.
was put as bishop of Mindong, yeah. In Fujian.
I certainly can understand the Catholics' reaction.
And so the Catholics, they were upset. But I would say one more thing, that Bishop Guo Shijing, who is the underground bishop, who had been made a step down, he was very obedient to the Pope. He said, we have lived obeying to the Pope.
Right.
We will continue obeying to the Pope also in this thing. And he invited all his faithful to obey to the new official bishop.
A very, very saintly man. Well, that's all the time I have this week for my conversation about the Church in China with Father Bernardo Chevalera of the Pim Missionary Fathers. But come back next week for part two, when we discuss a lot of China-related issues, such as all priests and bishops being obliged, to sign their adherence to the independent church document mandated by the government. We also take a deeper look at why the Vatican would re-sign the agreement it made in 2018 with the Chinese government, when in fact churches are being burned, destroyed, closed, crosses taken off of buildings, etc. So those issues and a lot more.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Carry EWTN with you everywhere. You can enjoy EWTN TV and radio live streams, many of the popular shows on demand, prayers and devotionals, and keep up on the latest Catholic news. For more, visit EWTNapps.com.